Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimad Bhaktivedanta Swami Nityanamane. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Prasadane. Shunyavari Paschatade Shatarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gorbhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 10 Chapter 45 Verse 4 Na Labdo Daiva Atayor Vaso Nau Bhava Antike Yam Bala Pitra Geha Sta Vindate Lalita Mudam Nalabdo Daiva Atayor Vaso now Bhavad Antike Yam Bala Pitra Gehasta Vindante Lalita Mudam Nalabdo Daiva Hatayor Vaso now Bhavad Antike Yam Bala Pitra Gehasta Vindante Lalita Mudam Not Labdha obtained Daiva by fate Hatayo who have been deprived Vasa residence now by us Bhavat Antike, in your presence, Yam, which Bala, children, Pitra, of their parents, Geha, in the home, Sta, staying, Vindante, experience, Lalita, pampered, Mudam, happiness. Translation, deprived by fate, we could not live with you and enjoy the pampered happiness most children enjoy in their parents' home. Purport, here Lord Krishna points out that not only did his parents suffer in separation from him and Balaram, but the two boys also suffered in separation from their parents. Translation, deprived by fate, we could not live with you and enjoy the pampered happiness most children enjoy in their parents' home. So, we see that this chapter is about the relationship of Krishna and Balaram with their one set of parents, Vasudeva and Devaki. Actually, they had two sets of parents, and sometimes we refer to Nanda and Yasoda as the foster parents or whatnot, because Krishna and Balaram were, or Krishna was first born from Vasudeva and Devaki, and then he was taken over the river to the other side. And it appears that Krishna was actually Vasudeva's child and not Nanda Maharaj's child, so we call him the foster child, so to speak. But actually, if we think carefully, we also understand that Nanda and Yasoda are the eternal parents of Krishna in the spiritual world. So they're not really foster parents at all. So we should not think in any way that the original parents are Vasudeva and Devaki, and that Nanda Maharaj and Yasoda are only secondary parents, because actually it's the opposite. And they're both parents, but actually the primary parents are Nanda and Yasoda. And the reason for that, of course, is that
we understand that the pastimes in Vrindavan of Krishna and the personalities there, the different associates of Krishna there, mother and father and elder gopas and gopis and the cowherd boys and the gopis, they are actually considered the most exalted of devotees. And Krishna in that form, between the ages of zero age and up till he's 10.5 years old, that is considered to be the best age of Krishna. And that form of Krishna is considered to be Swayam Bhagavan, the ultimate form of Krishna. So the ultimate devotees and the ultimate Krishna are there in Vrindavan. So they must be the original of everything. And everything else is, we say, expansion of that. So therefore, of course, we say that Krishna expands into Balaram, Balaram expands into other forms, and Krishna also has expansion in Mathura and Dwarka, and then those forms expand into the Narayan forms in Vaikuntha, etc. And similarly, Radha expands into the other queens of Dwarka, and then they expand into the Lakshmi forms in Vaikuntha. So ultimately, Krishna in Vrindavan is the ultimate form. So all those devotees of Krishna in Vrindavan are also the ultimate forms. So the ultimate parents are Nanda and Yasoda. And other parents are considered expansions of that or reflections of that. Nevertheless, we see that here, after Krishna left Vrindavan, and then he was with his parents, the relatives, the Vrishni dynasty, Yadu clan, in Mathura and Dwarka, he carried out relationships with them also in a very intimate way. And he accepted Vasudeva and Devaki as his parents, his actual parents. At the same time, he did not give up his relationship with Nanda and Yasoda. And in fact, we'll find that that relationship, Krishna actually says, I prefer that relationship. And nevertheless, he performs his pastimes on this earth. And in doing so, we find that either one group or the other is separated from Krishna. You cannot mix the two pastimes together. The Dwarka Mathura pastimes cannot mix with the Raja pastimes because there's a distinct difference in the mellow and the rasa. So therefore he has to keep them separate. Therefore, someone is going to be separated from Krishna. So in the first part of the pastimes, the Vrishnis and Vasudeva and Devaki are separated from Krishna. And that is stated in these first verses here where Krishna Balaram said, well, you were deprived of our childhood. We were in Vrindavan and you were separated from us for 10.5 years. And you never saw us, except in, of course, first moments of birth, they saw Krishna and then he was gone. Vasudeva took him away and then he never saw him for 10.5 years. So they suffered for separation in that period. People of the Vrishni dynasty and Vasudeva and Devaki. And they all are considered very great devotees, and a lot of them are Nityasiddha devotees of the Lord also. Yeah? So they do have very great prem, very great love for Krishna. And therefore that separation from Krishna causes a lot of pain to them. Of course, that pain is not real pain like material pain, it's also part of spiritual love. But nevertheless, they feel that separation very intensely for 11 years. Meanwhile, Krishna was enjoying with his parents there, Nanda and Yasoda and cowherd boys and the gopis for 10.5 years. Then he left them and he fulfilled his relationships with his mother and father, Vasudeva and Devaki, and all the relatives in Mathura and then Dwarka. So, by doing that, then he separated himself from the Rajavasis. Nanda and Yasoda and the cowherd boys and the gopis are all separated from Krishna. And not for 11 years, but many, 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 many years, apparently. And the next time they saw each other was in Kurukshetra. After Krishna had gone to Dwarka and killed many demons, etc., then in Dwarka. So, there was a big separation there from, and even then, they were there for some months, and then they had to part again. And the Vrajavasis went back to Vrindavan, and Krishna went back to Dwarka. And big separation again. So, either one in the pastimes on earth, we'll find this big separation between Krishna and his devotees. And this is part of the this is the unique quality, one of the unique qualities of the pastimes on earth. In the spiritual world, there's no separation, except that maybe at night time and then morning time, Krishna separates from the gopis, and in the daytime, he separates from Mother Yasoda and Nanda for a few hours when he goes out in the fields and comes back at night. But there's no prolonged, Krishna never goes to Mathura in the spiritual world and, you know, stays there for some time. He's always in Vrindavan. So that prolonged separation is not there. But it is part of the pastimes when he comes into the material world. So, we can say, well, why does he do that? Why does he have to do that? And the reason is that that prolonged separation intensifies the love between Krishna and his devotees. In other words, we see when Krishna leaves Vrindavan, then all the Rajavasis, they become intensely overcome with grief and all sorts of emotions. So that was an expression of the intensity of their love. And when Uddhava came there, after some time, and he observed them, then he immediately understood, these devotees are greater than the devotees in Mathura. Because after such a short time, the intensity of their feelings of separation are so great that almost dying. And we were sitting there in Mathura, separated from Krishna for 10.5 years, and we did not go through such symptoms at all. Such long separation, we did not go through that same feeling, those same feelings. So their love is much greater than ours. And they are constantly thinking of Krishna all day. And so much so that they don't cook their food and they don't do anything. They're just thinking of Krishna and when is Krishna coming back. And we do not do that. So he went back to Mathura and he told the people there, yes, those people are the real devotees of Krishna. They are greater than us, even though we are the, you know, parents of Krishna and the cousins of Krishna and the relatives of Krishna, etc. They're actually the greatest devotees. So that separation in the earthly past, prolonged separation in the earthly pastimes, that creates this intensity of love. And that is the explanation. Sometimes people will say, well, what is this? Krishna promises everybody, I'm coming back, and then he doesn't come back, and everybody's suffering, and everybody's almost dying, and why should Krishna cause suffering to everybody like this and not keep his promises to the greatest devotees? So I said, what kind of God is that? So superficially it looks as if Krishna is rather indifferent and he doesn't even fulfill his promise to the greatest devotees. And if we think about it, that's also very contradictory. How can Krishna do such a thing? If he says, Name Bhakta Pranashati, and I always protect my devotee, Yoga Chema Mahamyaham, and I take care of my devotee. And then with the greatest devotees, he just forgets about them for 100 years and breaks his promise and does everything. And yet Krishna, the Supreme Lord, is called Satyavak. He speaks truth only, and every word is truth and must come true, and all of his promises must come true, all of his statements must be true. So how is it possible? He tells the gopis when he's going away, I will come back. And as he's going away, he sends another messenger saying, I'm coming back. And he sends another messenger saying, I'm coming back. Not once, but many times he sent messages back as he was going. And then the gopis said, okay, he's coming back. And they waited and waited and waited, waited for years and years and years. Nothing happened. And then the cowherd boys and Nanda Maharaj and the elder cowherd men, they went to Mathura and they were with Krishna when he went there. And then after several days, then Krishna came to Nanda Maharaj and said, well, I think you better go back now. I'll come back in a few days, 2 or 3 days. So you better go now. And then Nanda Maharaj thought, okay, Krishna's coming back in 2 or 3 days, so we can tolerate that. So I'll go back. And Krishna gave so many reasons that I have to satisfy Vasudeva and Devaki and all the relatives here because they haven't seen me for, you know, 10.5 years, so I've got to give them a little comfort. And then I'll come back after a few days. So Nanda Maharaj went back with all the cowherd boys and the cowherd men. And Krishna didn't come back. So he makes all these promises, and then he doesn't fulfill them, and they're the greatest devotees. So that is very contradictory. Huh? And then we can say, well, later on he saw them at Kurukshetra. Even then, what happened? They were there for several months. They didn't have to be there for several months, actually. It was only the eclipse, and they were there for a few days. The eclipse happened. They took their bath in the river, and they saw Krishna, and Krishna saw them. And then the other people, all the great sages, and everyone departed, and the people went back to Dwarka. Krishna couldn't leave them, and they could not leave Krishna. So they stayed there. And they stayed in Kurukshetra. And every day they were associating with Krishna, and every day they said, tomorrow we'll go. And when the next day came, then they said, tomorrow we'll go. The next day came, and said, tomorrow we'll go. And this went on for 3 months. They kept delaying and delaying and delaying. And then finally, Krishna spoke to Nanda and the cowherd man and said, well, I still have a little bit of work to do. There's a few more demons left I have to kill. And I've told the people in Dwarka I'll come back there and handle a few affairs there, and I have to pacify them also. Then I'll come back. So then Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd men, they agreed, Krishna's making a promise again. So they went back, and then Krishna went back to Dwarka. And then we'll say, well, what happened? Krishna made another promise, he didn't go back. So it all seems very peculiar, because these are the greatest devotees, and Krishna tells the truth, and he's very attached to in other words, if they're the greatest devotees, Krishna's most attached to them. As you surrender unto me, I respond. So therefore, if they have the greatest attachment for Krishna, Krishna must have the greatest attachment for them. And as we know, Krishna surrenders to the devotee that has prema. And we have different levels of prema also. And at the top we have Radha. And Krishna is completely under the control of Radha. He's very attached to her, the most attached to her. And of course Radha is most attached to Krishna. So she's the supreme devotee, and he's most attached to her. So how is it possible that with these greatest devotees, somehow he just ignores them all, this makes all these promises and ignores them? So it's a big contradiction. So that contradiction has to be solved, otherwise it's very peculiar. So Bhishma Chakravarti actually solves the whole problem and says, there is, in the pastimes on earth, there is prolonged separation. And that prolonged separation is there for a reason. And the reason is to show that the Brajabasis are the greatest devotees because of the intensity of their love. And to show that, he separated himself from them. And then, of course, we can say, well, why did he have to stay more than 3 months? He could have done that in 3 months and then gone back or whatever. And actually, Vishwan Chakravarti says he did go back. And he went back after 3 months. After he sent Uddhava and he gave his letter and everything, after that, then he went back. But we don't see that. How's it possible? Because he was still in Mathura, then he took everyone to Dwarka, he moved them all to Dwarka. So how could Krishna have gone back? If he went back, he may have snuck out at night and gone back, come back in the morning or something. But we don't see that anywhere. And if so, he didn't stay there because he was in Mathura and Dwarka. So, we should not think that Krishna is limited like us, and that if he's in one place, he cannot be in another place. And of course, we should not think that Krishna made an allusion to the people of Mathura and Dwarka, and he actually wasn't there, and he never left Vrindavan. That should also not be there, because Krishna does satisfy Vasudeva and Devaki and the people there, and he has a real relationship with them, and that relationship is eternal. So he's not making a false form for them. So, Vishnu Chakravarti says, it is not true that Krishna didn't leave Vrindavan. Yes, he did. Even though it says, you know, Krishna never takes a step from Vrindavan or something. He actually did. He disagrees with some people that say that he never left at all. No, he did leave. But he didn't leave for a long time. He left for 3 months only. Then he went back. How did he go back? Because Krishna is God. He has many forms. He can make as many forms as he wants. So he went back in one form, and in one form, he was staying in Mathura. Well, that's good. But then, how is it possible that everyone sees Krishna in Mathura and Dwarka, but they never see Krishna in Vrindavan. After 3 months or 4 months or 5 months, they don't see him. And the Brijvasis are still waiting, and they were waiting until Kurukshetra to see him. How is it possible? He went back. So the answer to that is that there's two forms of Brijvasis also. One form is in separation from Krishna, and that's the visible form we see. And there's another form in which Krishna came back after 3 months, and with those, they're enjoying union with Krishna for the rest of their pastimes on earth. We don't see that. So there's two forms of Krishna, one in Mathura and Dwarka, and one in Vrindavan. And there's two forms of Brijvasis, those who are separated from Krishna until they come to Kurukshetra. And then there's another form that we don't see. All those Brijvasis are there, and they're enjoying with Krishna. Why do we have to say that? Because Krishna never breaks his promise. He should never break his promise, and he should come back to his greatest devotees. So in other words, two things are going on. Krishna keeping his promise and coming back, and Krishna not keeping his promise and staying with the people of the Yadus, the Rishni dynasty. So in this way, he fulfills his promise, but we don't see that most of the time. And at the same time, we see the external aspect of only the Dwarka, Mathura Dwarka pastimes. And we see the devotees of Raja undergoing that prolonged, very prolonged separation from Krishna. So that solves the problem in one sense. But we can say that, well, Vishnu Chakravarti just made all this up. That's not where it's saying in the scripture that he did this. So then he gives, actually he gives evidence when Uddhava came back, and then we see that actually he saw two forms there. When he first came, he saw everybody was happy, and all the cowherd men were there feeding the cows, and they were calling out the cows' names. Everyone is joyful. And then another description later on, they're all suffering. And now they're just sold around cooking, and the kitchen is full of spider webs, and nobody's cooking, and they have to call a brahmana to do the cooking for Uddhava because nobody's there, nobody's cooking. So there's, in other words, he sees two visions of Vrindavan also. So this is, nothing is impossible for Krishna. He can manifest two sets of Brijvasis, and the two sets don't interact. One is completely in separation from Krishna, grieving. The other is completely happy, continuing the pastimes again. Same pastimes. And the two sets do not interact by the yogamaya potency of Krishna. This is extraordinary power of Krishna. And neither is unreal. Both are real. And then the others are real also. The pastimes and Dwarka and Mathura are also real. It's all Krishna. So we should not think this is astonishing. And we see later on, in Dwarka, this was manifest also with the queens when Narada Muni came there. Then he came and saw Krishna with Rukmini, and they were having pastimes together, intimately talking, and Rukmini was serving Krishna. But then Narada Muni quickly went at the speed of the mind, because he's Narada Muni, you know, he can travel like across the universe in a second. So he went to another palace, and he saw Krishna there also, with that queen, and doing something different. And then he was astonished by that one, how Krishna be here. Then he went to instantly went to another palace, and he saw Krishna there also. And Krishna was at a different time of the day, doing something else. And he quickly went to another palace, and Krishna was in another part of the day, doing something else again. And he went to another palace, and Krishna was another queen, and in another season, doing something else differently. So in a few seconds, Krishna was everywhere, and he was at different times of the day, doing different things. And he went back to the same palace, and there was Rukmini sitting with Krishna still. So Krishna was in all forms of 16,108 forms in those palaces, doing different things at different times of the day and different seasons with each of the queens. So he satisfied everybody, and nobody detected it except Narada Muni. None of the people of the Yadu dynasty, even Uddhava, detected that Krishna was actually in all the palaces simultaneously satisfying each queen. So Krishna could do extraordinary things. can expand himself in all sorts of forms. Krishna is most extraordinary, because he is God, he can do anything. He does this because he satisfies all of his devotees. So he satisfies all the queens. He satisfies the Vrajavasis. He satisfies everyone. Even in the Rasa Leela, he satisfied all the gopis by expanding himself into 3 billion forms. And each gopi thought, Krishna's only with me, and they're all, Krishna's everywhere. Because in the Rasa Leela, there was a Krishna, and there was a gopi, and a Krishna, and a gopi, and a Krishna, and a gopi. But each gopi thought, Krishna's only with me. And he was with each of them. And none of them were illusory. And he satisfied each gopi. So this way, Krishna satisfies all of his devotees by his extraordinary love and mercy, and by his extraordinary power. He's with everyone. And not only with the gopis, Krishna was each of the cowherd boys. When they were in the forest and they would sit down, Krishna had thousands and thousands and thousands of cowherd boys, and there was millions of calves and stuff going out into the forest. And Krishna would sit down in the middle of the day, and they would open their lunch packs that their mothers made, and they would start eating. And everybody wanted to be next to Krishna. You know, and if you have, 20,000 cowherd boys, they're trying to be next to Krishna. It'd be a little difficult. So it's described in Bhagavatam that Krishna was in the center and all the cowherd boys were around him like a lotus. But even then, if you're on the outer side, they'd be a mile away from Krishna. How are you going to see Krishna? And it is said that Krishna was next to each cowherd boy. So by his extraordinary power, Krishna was with each cowherd boy, and each cowherd boy had Krishna facing him. And they would exchange food, and Krishna would eat their food, and they would steal his food. It was all going on. So Krishna expanded himself with each cowherd boy also, out of his great love for each cowherd boy, and to respond to their affection. So Krishna takes care of all of his devotees. He does not neglect at all any of his devotees. So we should not think of Krishna leaves his devotees. He actually doesn't keep his promise or anything like that. No, he does keep his promise. But he also separates for a good reason, and that is to increase that intensity of love and to show that intensity of love to the whole world. So that's the reason. Krishna here talks about separating from Vasudeva and Devaki, missed my childhood pastimes, etc. So all of this is for good reason. In this way, by separating himself for 10.5 years from Vasudeva and Devaki, their sense of Viparlamba, they had that sense of separation from Krishna. And then when they met Krishna in Mathura, then they had this great joy of meeting him. So they had different emotions also. But then another point is that Krishna did this to show the greatness of the love of the Vrajavasis. Comparatively, when we have two separations, the separations of the Vrajavasis was much greater. So therefore, this is a glorification of the devotees in Vrindavan. That they are the greatest devotees of all. Of course, Krishna is the greatest, and all of his devotees are great. But the Krishna in Vrindavan is the supreme form, and the devotees there are the supreme devotees. So by that separation, prolonged separation, that is illustrated to the whole world. So that is another reason why he does this, to show the whole world the supreme position of the Vrajavasis and their love for Krishna. So anyway, that separation takes place, and that separation appears like the separation in this material world, just as parents are separated from their children for a long period, then they feel pain. Or lovers are separated, they feel pain, like Romeo and Juliet, when they're separated, they feel pain. Friends, when they're separated, feel pain also. So there's this feeling is there in the material world. So it is true that the spiritual emotions, the spiritual activities, the spiritual relationships and love are very similar to those of the human beings in the material world. Very, very similar. And that is analyzed by Rupa Goswami. And if we see his analysis of the relationships It is very similar to material relationships which are analyzed by Bharat Muni in his work, his Shastra, his dramatic work, Natya Shastra, in which he describes and for depicting in drama and plays the relationships between the characters. And these are all mundane characters. But to depict their relationships of love and anger, etc., he analyzes rasa. And it's the same, it looks very similar to Rupa Goswami's rasa. So many scholars will say, well, Rupa Goswami just borrowed the concepts from Bharat Muni, the material rasa, and then stuck them onto Krishna's pastimes and analyzed them in the same way. But actually, we see it's actually not the same, because he has disagreement with some of Bharat Muni's analysis. It's actually, we don't agree with this point, we don't agree with this point, like this. So there's several points of contention there. In other words, he doesn't even accept the secondary rasas as rasas. He says they're actually vibhachari bhavas, they're not even rasas, ultimately. Only the five primary rasas are there. And Bharat Muni doesn't have five primary rasas. His rasas, the main ones, are the secondary ones. Because in drama, we get all these things like anger and, things coming out. So he doesn't have Vatsalya rasa at all. And Sakya rasa aren't there in his concept. So when Rupa Goswami analyzes everything, yes, it is similarity. Why? Because God is the source of everything. And God's relationship with his devotees is the source of all relationships that are reflected in the material world. So there is some similarity there. We should not think it as backwards, and that Rupa Goswami is simply taking the material relationships and imposing that on his concept of God and making a thing up. No, it's the opposite. That there is similarity, because God has all possible relationships and all possible emotions, etc., in perfect form. And he establishes relationships with his devotees, and those are reflected also in the material relationships in this material world. There's an idea of bliss and happiness. The happiness comes from love, and the love comes from relationships. So we'll find similar types of relationships in the material world and the spiritual world. And it's all based on love. The happiness comes from love. Love between two similar people. So there are a lot of similarities, but it's all because of the Supreme Lord. Everything emanates from Him. So we should not think the opposite, that it's all the other way around. So we'll find similarities, therefore, between in Krishna's relationships with His devotees and in the material world. But the difference is that the relationships with Krishna are perfect. And though there may be separation in that relationship also, that is part of the perfection. Whereas in the material world, it isn't. The separation takes place, and sometimes the separation is permanent. And when you die, it is permanent. And nothing can change that after that point. One of the two parties dies, it's finished. Permanent separation. So it's not like that in Krishna's pastime. Yes, separation is there, but it's for a purpose, and then there is union. Krishna comes back in all cases. And then there's greater joy. So there's no separation forever, as that happens in the material world. So it only increases the bliss. So this is what we have here in the pastimes in the 10th canto. We find Krishna in separation, or Krishna meeting the devotees. And this causes various types of emotion, which are all spiritual, and add to the flavor of the love between the devotee and Krishna. So here in this verse we find that Krishna is saying that we also were separated from you, and we missed your caring for us. We were cared for by Yasoda and Nanda. And of course, Krishna liked that also. He was very happy with that. But we were deprived of your care as small children. We could not get that affection from you. So we also feel that separation. So just as the devotees feel separation from Krishna, and at that time they cannot serve him directly, So Krishna also feels separated from the devotees. Okay? As much as the devotee feels separation from Krishna, Krishna feels separation from the devotees. Even though he is God, and he is perfect, and he's complete in himself, for his devotees, he'll feel intense separation. So as much as they have separation from him, Krishna also feels the same. And so we should not think that Krishna is indifferent. And therefore he forgot about the gopis, and he forgot about Mother Yasoda and Nanda, whatever. Sometimes they criticize Krishna like that. Oh, Krishna's forgotten us, and he's, you know, women of Mathura are more attractive than us. We're just cowherd people. So they're more beautiful and sophisticated in the city and the kshatriyas and whatever. Krishna never forgets. And we see in Brihad Bhagavatamrita there, the story is told how Uddhava says, actually, see, we're not such great devotees also, because I know Krishna and I stay with him all day long. And when he goes to bed at night, all he does in his sleep, he's talking about the gopis and the cowherd man and everyone. He's not dreaming about Dwarka. He's dreaming about Vrindavan. He's talking all asleep. He's talking about Vrindavan. And when he wakes up in the morning, then he understands I'm back in Dwarka again. He's so sad. So in the daytime, yes, he's happy with the people and he's carrying on his relationship, but actually, he's feeling for the people of Raja, like that. So Krishna feels separation from the people of Vrindavan also, just as they feel separation from him. And he's also separated from the people of Mathura when he's in Raja. He doesn't show it, but he's also separated from them. And as much as they feel separation from him, he also feels the same. So Krishna responds and feels just like his devotee. The response is equal. And no one should feel that Krishna is ever indifferent. Now, as far as the material world is concerned, then we do activities and we wonder, is Krishna responding to us or not, because we don't feel anything and Krishna doesn't speak to us and, you know, he doesn't perform miracles for us every day. So is he really doing anything? So, of course, we should understand that we will see very explicit things when one has very intense devotion. Yeah? In other words, as you surrender unto me, I will surrender unto you. Yeah? So therefore, we're never getting a response from Krishna. It's also an indication of the weakness of our devotion. We have a little for this. Krishna has little for you. Yeah? When you show great devotion for Krishna, then Krishna also shows great devotion for them. Of course, sometimes Krishna is extraordinary, and he may do extraordinary things, as with Gajendra. Gajendra was just a mixed devotee. He wasn't even doing pure bhakti. He was mixed, and he was reciting some prayers, please save me from the crocodile, and he recited some prayers. But Supreme Lord manifested himself before him and saved him and killed the crocodile. Even though his devotion was not so great, but he actually remembered the Lord and recited prayers to the Lord in distress. So the Lord was very merciful to him. So yes, even for devotees who are not so advanced, the Lord may show mercy, but that may be a little rare. And that kripa is not so common. But the Lord can do that also. He doesn't have to follow any rules. So he can do that. But normally, little devotion, little response. More devotion, more response. This is the normal course of things. Sometimes extraordinary mercy, yes, but rare. Yeah? So therefore, if we don't feel all the time that great mercy of the Lord, it's because our commitment to the Lord also is not so much. And if we really want that response from the Lord, then we have to also increase our devotion. Yeah? And it can't be false devotion. And it has to be genuine devotion, real love of Krishna, not something that we make up and to show. Because Krishna knows what show is also. He's not interested in that. He's interested in the devotion. I'm not interested in the flower that you offer, if it's a nice flower or whatever. I'm interested in the devotion that you offer it with. So Krishna can detect that because he is Supreme Lord and he can expand himself into billions of forms and he knows everything in the world and he's Paramatma and he's in every atom. He knows past, present, and future. And he's throughout all the universes and existence and all the spiritual world simultaneously. So he knows everything. So whatever sincerity is there, he will also understand, and he will respond to that accordingly. And whatever he does is actually for the betterment of the devotee, to help the devotee. For people who are not devotees, he lets karma act. That is the mercy of the Lord for people who are not devotees. For people who are devotees, then he does something else. Karma may be there still, yes. Karma is still going on. But as well, the Lord is there to do what is best for the devotee. So sometimes the Lord may do things which are worse than karma for the devotee. Yeah, worse disasters. If it is beneficial for the devotee's advancement, you may take everything away suddenly. The Lord says this in Bhagavatam, I will take everything away gradually and you're left with nothing. And then you surrender completely to me. But the Lord doesn't do that in all cases. But some cases he may do that if it's beneficial to make the devotee detached, and that attachment is such obstacle to his progress, then he will take everything away. So that's not karma. That's the Lord himself doing. Other times he doesn't do that. If he understands that it's favorable for your progress, then he may give you more. So he gave Dhruva whole kingdom. And Dhruva said, I don't want any of this. Then you take. Because you want it, you take it. So the Lord will give things also if it is not an interference to one's bhakti. And certainly, the Lord is interested in that development of the devotion, so that is how he responds. And even the karma. The karma we have to endure in general, but with the progress of bhakti, karma is destroyed. It is not destroyed instantaneously. It will go on. Karmas will go on through nishtha and up to asakti. Karmas will continue. So we will have to suffer those things also. And then we get the personal interference of the Lord. He may do different things also for us. So there's all that going on simultaneously. So that is how the Lord acts for the devotee. And it may not be apparent to us that the Lord is acting in these ways for our benefit. But the Lord is doing something for us. And the result of that is, if one goes through all of that and perseveres in bhakti, and gradually that love increases, when it reaches a certain stage, then the Lord will show himself to the devotee. And that is bhava. In bhava stage, then the Lord shows himself. And one has finished sadhana bhakti at that point. And then one gets real mercy from the Lord. He shows himself to you. He gives you spiritual senses so you can see him. Gives you spiritual intelligence, gives you spiritual bliss, capacity for spiritual bliss. It's all done by the mercy of the Supreme Lord. So the Lord responds according to our devotion. For the sadhaka and for the siddha also. So that even if one is siddha, there are different degrees of love. So we have the Narayan bhaktas and the Ram bhaktas, and they all have various degrees of love, and the Lord responds to that. And with Krishna bhaktas, then there's also various degrees. Shanta rasa and different rasas, and the Lord responds accordingly to each person. So this is the perfection of the Lord. So here he's expressing the fact that he's also separated from Vasudeva and Devaki and feeling some pain and of love because he didn't, he missed the care that they would give him. So the Lord is completely considerate of everyone, and he also experiences the same love that the devotee feels for him. Okay. They are also eternal parents of Krishna in Mathura and Dwarka. There's a Mathura in the spiritual world and a Dwarka in the spiritual world. And Vasudeva and Devaki are there, the Yadus are there. So they have parental rasa. The difference is their parental rasa is mixed with they understand that Krishna also is God. And because they saw him when he came out of the womb, he had his four hands there, he was Narayan. And for three births, you know, they had prayed, okay, let us have Krishna as our son, the Supreme Lord as our son, and they got him as their son three times. So they appreciated him as God and as their son simultaneously. So that is inferior 2, Nanda and Yasoda, who did not think of Krishna as God. They thought him only as our son. And the reason is that when you think of Krishna as God, that interferes with your affection as the son. It restrains your affection as a son. You think, well, maybe I shouldn't do this because he's God. Maybe I shouldn't put him in my arms because he's God. So there's a little bit of a hesitation there, restraint, when there is a realization of Krishna as God. So therefore their intensity, the intensity of the emotion is not as much as in Vrindavan. Well, as I said, bhakti itself reduces karma. Krishna doesn't have, well, we said bhakti is coming from Krishna anyway, because the mercy of Krishna's bhakti shakti. Krishna has a bhakti shakti, and that shakti acts in bhakti. And then it, klesha gni takes place. Destruction of all karmas, destruction of all miseries, destruction of all past memories of whatever impressions from billions of lifetimes, all this gets destroyed by bhakti. Bhakti Shakti. And that continuously takes place from the beginning of bhakti all the way up until bhava. That takes place. And even in bhava, there's a little trace left. So it's taking place automatically through the process of bhakti. Yes, Krishna's doing it through bhakti.
As the material bhaktis didn't have Krishna's association right up until this period, so can we say that they are unable to experience the same separation?
Vasudeva and Devaki, they saw him when he was born, and then they had to separate from him a few hours later. So that separation was from them. And of course, the other Brajavasis heard about Krishna because they told afterwards they also knew that Krishna was born to Vasudeva and Devaki. So there were more anticipation. So in analysis of rasa, they have those people who have not seen Krishna before. There's that type of separation. Like even the Pandavas, they didn't see Krishna until much later also. They heard about him, but they never ever saw him until actually much later. But before that time, they were in separation from Krishna. So there's that separation, never having seen Krishna. Then you meet him. And then there's the separation later. After you've seen Krishna, you separate from him. The two varieties are there.
You mentioned that Bharatamuni had a commentary on secondary rasas as third and primary. Can you explain how he was, what type of consciousness made him say like that?
And
what's his position in relation to our Vaishnava line and the commentators in that line?
Yeah. Well, Bharatamuni actually came much before, I don't know how many years before, maybe a few hundred years before Rupa Goswami. Maybe it was 13th century or something like that. And he was quite, everybody, all the literary people, you know, that study literary works, they would have to study his shastra also. So his analysis is there's not only rasa, he has so many things, you know, the costumes you use in drama and so many things, how to make a stage, all the technical aspects of dramas are there also. And part of it is the concept of rasa, which he's prominent because he analyzed it, the first one to analyze rasa in drama. So, as I said, it's a little different because he does not have all the primary rasas like Sakya and Vatsalya aren't even there. He has the conjugal rasa, definitely, and he has Shanta rasa. But Shanta rasa, he takes as almost the supreme rasa. And then all the secondary rasas like the rodra, you know, the anger and the fear and the vibhatsa, the disgust, these are quite prominent also. And he doesn't really separate between primary and secondary. And one of the reasons is, of course, in material world, when we're depicting dramas, that the secondary ones are often very prominent in a drama. So we'll have the fighting and people killing each other. And this is exciting in a drama in the material world. And if you look at most material movies and whatever we have nowadays, it's all violence and killing and suspense and fear and excitement and valor. All these secondary rasas are there. Virya rasa, all these Srauta rasa, Baya rasa. All these ones are very prominent. So for common people and common dramas, these secondary rasas are attractive in one sense. Love, of course, is there, and we'll find a love story. Usually in most dramas, we'll find a love story somewhere like as well. But the secondary ones are very, very prominent in the material world. But he doesn't make a distinction between secondary and primary, actually. They're all there, minus some of the primary ones.
How and why is it that by just loving a person like Krishna, it fulfills everything?
Why loving Krishna?
No. How and why is it just by loving Krishna you feel fulfilled?
Oh, I see. Yeah. Well, the Atma has its consciousness and knowledge and capacity for happiness, etc. And the Atma can be satisfied only by contacting another conscious being who is similar and also perfect. So God is similar to the Atma, and he is also perfect. In other words, we may say we're perfect ourselves. So in a sense we are, but we also aren't, because we are subject to ignorance and mistakes. And Krishna is never subject to ignorance or mistakes. And as I said, he has infinite capacity to satisfy everybody, whereas the jiva cannot do that even in his perfect state. So if we were to establish another relationship with another Atma, spiritually speaking, it might be somewhat satisfying, but still not completely satisfying, because that Atma is also limited. God is unlimited, and he can satisfy everybody simultaneously. So it is spiritual relationship that causes satisfaction. And God is the source of that. Now, why Krishna? Why not Vishnu or Rama or whatever? Yes, all forms of satisfying, one says. The reason we say Krishna is because Krishna manifests completely all of the qualities and characteristics of God, whereas the other forms hide some aspects of God and don't do that. So it's not as complete in that way. They're there, but they're not shown, they're not manifest. And Krishna manifests everything. So we'll not find all the rasas there. If you want Sakya Rasa, a friendly relationship with God, you can't do that with Vishnu. Not there. If you want Madhurya Rasa with Vishnu, cannot do it. Vishnu and Lakshmi are the only ones that have Madhurya Rasa. So basically I have to have Dasya Rasa with Vishnu. And similar with all the other forms, Rama or whatever, you cannot have all the relationships. Krishna, they're all available in the most intimate form.
And Krishna says, do your duties and give the results to you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we are doing our duties, we are paying attention to our duties, and for that time of attention, we lose our focus on Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, those duties actually, when Krishna gives that instruction, this is karma yoga, so to speak, mm-hmm. and offering the results to Krishna. So that is mixed bhakti in one sense.
Mm-hmm.
Eh? Karma Mr. Bhakti. Eh? When we simply do everything for Krishna, only think of Krishna, that is pure bhakti. So when the people in Vrindavan serve Krishna, they're not thinking I'm doing my duties and then I'm offering it to Krishna. They're just doing everything for Krishna. Mother, you sort of boil some milk for Krishna. Now I'm doing some duty and then I'm going to offer it to Krishna. No, everything is for Krishna. And so that is superior.
But when we are doing our duties, we get entangled to them. So what is the difference between...
Which duties? Which duties? Devotional service or working in a factory or doing my duty working in a factory and then offering a little bit of the result to Krishna? Or doing your duty in the temple sweeping the floor? Which one?
Like for your general living.
A general living, yeah. It is a distraction for us. That's why the material body is not so favorable for devotional service. You have to take care of the material body. It has to sleep, it has to eat, it has to breathe and do so many things which aren't really devotional service. And we have to do them to support the body so we can do some devotional service. So this is a limitation of our material body. So as long we have to tolerate that, as long as the body is there, tolerate and accept the needs of the material body. But it's not perfect. And only when you have a spiritual body, then you don't have to. You're not dependent on all these material things.
We should not be worrying about doing our duties perfectly or getting entangled in this world and this body.
No, shouldn't worry about it. The main duty is to surrender to Krishna. Everything else is secondary to that. So if you surrender to Krishna, then Bhagavatam says, it is not sinful if you neglect the other duties, ultimately. Yeah? If you are surrendering to Krishna, all the other duties are secondary to that. If you neglect them, they're not sinful. Though normally in the Varnashram system, this is a very sinful, if you don't do this, you don't do that, you don't do this, it's all sinful. But if you do bhakti, then it's not sinful if you neglect them.
Everybody understands in terms of Krishna's incarnations, because Krishna is in Vrindavan is the only form of God who shows the 64.
Yeah.
So then you would understand that the other incarnations they come to think of Krishna, they could possibly have all the 64 within them, but they never manifest.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're also attracted to that original form. So
yeah.
They're understanding they have them, but they don't manifest.
Yeah.
All.
Yeah. Yeah. If the other forms didn't have the qualities, then they would say they're imperfect. And how can they be imperfect and be God? So God is one and God is perfect. Yeah? But because of the different forms, those forms will manifest a certain number of qualities. Yeah? Like Matsya or Kurma. But they cannot manifest, because of the particular form, they will not manifest all the relationships and all those qualities. Yeah? That doesn't mean they don't have them, but they don't manifest in that particular form. So God is God and He has all the qualities, but a particular form will limit the manifestation of those qualities. So this is the explanation of Rupa Goswami and Bhagavad Bhagavatamrita. It says they don't, it's not that they are imperfect, but they don't manifest all the qualities. That's all.